We're back, second hour of the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun with my special guest, Michael Gatti, expert on the Civil War and the real reasons it was fought, and also my pilot today, Daryl from Alabama. Now, you were just talking before the break, Michael, about how you tried to get another copy of this document that you had gotten once stamped. It was only cost you a nickel, and all of a sudden a friend of yours, a colonel, wants to get another copy, and now they won't give it to you. Go ahead.
Well, that's exactly true, and to me that's very alarming because my mind went immediately to Orwell in 1984 and the purging of documents. So are these documents, which were so available for so long, will these documents now be totally unavailable to future researchers? I certainly think that's the plan.
Daryl?
Well, that'd be consistent with covering up the crime, would it not? You know, if you can't identify a problem, did a problem ever exist? So this is what censorship is all about, whether you do it in paper or whether you do it in political correctness. You abrogate, you eliminate the memory. That's powerful.
Well, now, you had mentioned before the top of the hour, we're finding out the reasons why we didn't go to war, and now we're in this hour. We're going to find, I guess, the real reasons why we did go to war. Am I right in that, or did I miss that part? Because I'm all ears.
Well, no, sir. But I believe the thing I've learned over the years, and basically this is usually a 2 to 3 hour lecture for me, so I'm trying to break it up into parts. But I think it is absolutely, if you're going to get the people to understand the end result and how the so-called Civil War has affected everything that has happened in this country for the past 150 years, I think if we get people to understand that, we basically have to give it to them in segments to the point to where they will accept it, because the thing I've found, you just can't feed Americans too much truth. They get nutty and start running off like their hair's on fire.
Yeah, I kind of found that out yesterday on John's show. Go ahead and continue there, Michael. Give us a tidbit we could chew on.
Okay, one of the things I found that was the people, not only like Stonewall Jackson, but the other people who saw exactly where this was going, and one of them is one of my personal heroes in the Confederacy, and that was General Patrick Claiborne. A good old Arkansas boy who had emigrated from Ireland. But he saw this coming, and I will quote something from him, and I think digest this, gentlemen, because this is so relevant in my opinion. And here is the quote. Every man should endeavor to understand the meaning of subjugation before it is too late. We can give but a faint idea when we say it means the loss of all we now hold most sacred. Personal property, lands, homesteads, liberty, justice, safety, pride, manhood. It means that the history of this heroic struggle will be written by our enemy, that our youth will be trained by northern school teachers, will learn from northern school books their version of the war, will be impressed by all influences of history and education to regard our gallant dead as traitors, our maimed veterans as fit objects for their derision. It means the crushing of Southern manhood. To establish sectional superiority and a more centralized form of government and to deprive us forever of our rights and liberties. It was written on the 2nd of January, 1864.
2nd of January, 1864. Go ahead, Daryl.
Well, his foresight is prophetic. it speaks for itself. In fact, that is exactly what's happened. But it's not just been in the southern states. I would submit that it's nationwide that they've lost their identity and manhood.
Oh, I could not agree more. And as you gentlemen were talking there, I thought of this quote from Søren Kierkegaard, and it was, "There are two ways to be fooled. One is to believe what isn't true. The other is to refuse to believe that which is true."
Wow, that fits part and parcel. That's it fits part and parcel with a statement that Daryl made to me this morning over the phone. Some people just refuse to take yes for an answer. but anyway, yeah. Okay, so go ahead and continue, Michael. Let's get into more of the meat of this. In you know, where are we up to? About 1863, I believe, midway through the war.
Well, 1863, 1864. I thought it was ironic that upon the passage of the Emancipation Proclamation, Secretary of State Seward made the offhand remark, which was published in the papers. He said, "Isn't this amazing? We are freeing the black man where we have no control, and we are keeping him in bondage where we could free him."
I'm digesting. So, go ahead. Go ahead.
So even those people in the administration saw this for what it was. But we did have other operators, and I know what Daryl was alluding to earlier, was the fact that in a year or two prior to the war actually breaking out, we had a visitor, another visitor from France that was occupying our country, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but he was going from state to state, and he was visiting, and he was talking to people. But all the while, he was forwarding all of the intel he could collect back to his uncle in France. And this gentleman's name was Solomon James Rothschild. And he developed a very close relationship with people in the North and people within in the South, and he sent 13 letters back to his uncle, who was, as we know, the father of the Rothschild family. And these were sent back to him to explain to him what was going on in America and how this could best be exploited to their financial gain. And I was fortunate enough way back when to make copies of all of these documents, these 13 letters, and because now they do not exist. So if you start researching for these letters, you won't find anyone who says, "Okay, well, I tell you where you can find them," because I haven't been able to find them anywhere, but I have the letters, and I have their content, and I have shared many of them with Daryl.
Well, there's a man named Richard Grove who has a website called Tragedy and Hope 101, and he has spent the last, I expect it's about the last 4 years of his productive life compiling and writing a book on the Rothschilds. And I had some correspondence with him, and he became aware of those letters. And in all of his research and everybody else's research, that nobody's ever come across these letters either, which makes it particularly powerful information. It's really, you know, deep intel. And let's see, the Rothschilds, they were part of a banking family, weren't they? They had some interest in banking.
There is a rumor to that effect.
Can I interject something here? I have to ask you this off the top of my head. This Richard Grove, is this the same Richard Grove that I interviewed many years ago that had some correlation? He was involved in some capacity, financially or business-wise, in the 9/11 event. Is it the same guy?
I couldn't speak to that, Michael. He's a fairly young guy relative to me. I put him in his late 30s about now. His website is Tragedy and Hope 101, examining Carol Quigley's work. So I don't know about that.
Okay, well, the age-wise, it sounds about right. So I'm going to have to check into that and see, because I remember interviewing a Richard Grove probably 10 years ago, and he had some financial ties, and he wrote some kind of documentation regarding the financial criminality involved regarding 9/11, if that's the same guy. But okay, I'll check into that later. Getting back to where we were, okay, talking about the Rothschilds and the bankers. So Solomon Rothschild writes back to his uncle, writes 13 letters to his uncles. Are you going to give us any luscious tidbits of any of these letters here, Michael?
Well, basically, they have to be taken in their collectivity to actually determine, because it was bits and pieces as he was traveling among the socially elite of the North and the socially elite of the South. I brought up the point of the letters and his association with folks to bring up his association with a gentleman with a lot of power in the Confederacy who was one time Secretary of War, and he was Stonewall Jackson and PGT Beauregard both threatened to resign their positions in the military if he was allowed to remain as Secretary of War. There are thoughts that can be verified that he was responsible for holding Stonewall Jackson back from actually going into Washington, D.C. after the Battle of First Bull Run or First Manassas, and that he also had Jefferson Davis's ear. And Stonewall Jackson, a man of very high moral character, who very seldom said anything negative about anyone, referred to this gentleman, whose name was Judah P. Benjamin. And the Stonewall Jackson referred to Judah P. Benjamin as Jefferson Davis's pet Jew.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And me as a dot connector, I have to ask, what specifically the timeline when Stonewall Jackson wanted to go in after the Battle of Manassas and Bull Run, I remember you saying, what timeline was that where he wanted to march right into Washington and Rothschild held him back?
That was the very first battle, after the very first Battle of Bull Run, where immediately, and I go into this in a military strategical class, but what happened was that the first Battle of Bull Run, the first general to actually see the effects of two brand new weapons at the time, to see their effects on warfare, was General Bee of South Carolina. General Bee was the one who gave Stonewall Jackson his sobriquet of Stonewall. But immediately they began to see that rifle muskets and the Parrott cannon were absolutely going to destroy Hardee's tactics, which both sides had been taught at West Point. So you couldn't line up your men in big lines and march directly across a field against your enemy, because they would be chewed to pieces with these new rifle muskets and the Parrott cannons, which were firing grape or canister. So what happened was B started ordering his men to lie flat on the ground when they fired. In other words, it was not the traditional, let's all stand up and shoot at each other. So shortly after rallying his men at the First Manassas with the plea of his men had begun to retreat from battle, and he said, look, stand strong, men, because there stands Jackson like a wall of stone, and which Jackson did. And Jackson himself saw that the strategy had tremendously changed since Mexico. So he immediately decided that, hey, we can't stand face-to-face and just stand here and kill each other. So he developed a flanking movement at the time. Had it not been for Stonewall at the First Battle of Manassas, the South would have been defeated in the first battle.
So they were go ahead. I mean, I was going to say, they were using the same military protocols of combat as the Revolutionary War, right? They'd all stand, but, you know, and the British soldiers would stand in a straight line, and they'd all fire, and then they'd go back and load their muskets and so forth. And that was literally the protocols of war up until this point in time, because the Minutemen in the Revolutionary War kind of subverted that. But you're saying that these two new weapons by General B One was the ferret cannon, and the other one was a new kind of musket. What made this new musket better than the old muskets they were using, Michael?
It was accuracy. The smoothbore muskets that had been used prior, the reason you had a whole line of men, or a whole platoon, or whatever you wanted to call them, a whole line of men to send out a sheet of fire was because of the total inaccuracy of the weapon. You just hoped that if you had 30 people shooting, at least three people would get hit.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, and so this new line of musket that they made was had a better bore, much better accuracy, and you could actually hit what you were aiming at, right?
Well, it had rifling. It was the first weapon with rifling, which produced the accuracy. For people who don't understand that, try to throw a football sideways or try to throw it in a spiral. The accuracy was greatly improved, and they were deadly at up to 300 yards from a single round. So suddenly, and no one had really thought about the effects of these weapons until the Battle of First Manassas, Stonewall saw it immediately. Johnson and Beauregard did not, and they were getting their backsides kicked all over the field until Stonewall started making these flanking maneuvers and hitting the people. In other words, he said, Jackson's axiom was, if an attack must be made, it must be made by my enemy on my position, a position of my choosing. He was brilliant, and he did that, and that's why he was able to. But he went to personally to Jefferson Davis, and he went to Robert E. Lee on several occasions, and he proposed a battle plan for moving into Maryland and cutting off the D.C. from their supplies, which was a brilliant maneuver, but no one would allow him to do it, and he felt like the influence of that was coming from Judah P. Benjamin.
Yeah, and it's, I'll take that back relevant to the Vietnam War. You know, the battle plans laid out for the Vietnam War, the demilitarized zone and all, and, you know, they would only let our soldiers go so far and do so many things, and they were controlled as to what they could do, what attacks they could make. And it was being controlled from the controllers, if you will, the banksters, the people that were financing the war, and it was designed to continue in perpetuity. So are we looking at behind the scenes here with Benjamin and, Solomon Rothschild and his uncle and so forth? Are we looking at that same scenario here in the Second American Revolution, Michael?
Absolutely. And just as a point of interest, with all of the Confederate statues being torn down and removed in New Orleans, the only Confederate statue that was never touched was the statue of Judah P. Benjamin.
Wow. Daryl, you want to jump into the mix on this, my pilot?
Well, it's amazing to have the clarity of looking at history through the lens of Michael Getty's research. It all of a sudden, in a very short hour and 15 minutes here, things are starting to become clearer all the time, and it would appear that. As the great work of one of your other co-hosts, that all wars are banker wars, are that maxim is coming true once again. And there must have been some big benefit in them prolonging the war and getting the outcome that they wanted. And I'm probably jumping ahead here a little bit, and I apologize, Michael Getty, but I can't hardly resist that. You know, I'm like Oscar Wilde. The only thing I can't resist is temptation. And the point of all this for me was that the reality that we live in economically was founded in the outcome of that war. And I apologize for jumping ahead, but they had a distinct plan that they wanted to exercise. And it was a different form of slavery that they wanted to incorporate.
Well, and, I don't want to jump ahead of the mix either, but I'm sure that, you know, at some point before the program's over, we may touch on the 14th Amendment. We got a break coming up. I'm going to let Michael Getty have the floor. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening. Fascinating discussion with two brilliant guys. Folks, I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am. Be back in three. Thank you. a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have, do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank-you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all right, doing the best you can. Well, it's all right, as long as you lend a hand.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening and my fascinating guest, Michael Getty, along with my pilot, Daryl, in Alabama. During the break, I was thinking about this, and I know I may be jumping ahead of the gun here, guys, but in my 20-year paper war with the Internal Revenue Service, one of the many shots fired across my bow in said paper war was something about the 14th Amendment, alluding to the fact that because of the 14th Amendment, I had to pay taxes. Were you going to touch on the 14th Amendment at any time during this broadcast, Michael?
Absolutely.
Okay, I don't mean to jump the gun. If you've got something to preface this, please do. This is a short segment, then we're going to have another long one. So go ahead and get back into
it. Let me cover this in a short section, and let me admonish both you and Daryl for trying to eat the peach cobbler before we have the pinto beans and cornbread taken care of.
You're riding in our airplane, Michael. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Michael.
Well, the unconstitutional tyrannical government of 1861 to 2018, their house servants, better known in polite circles as the mainstream media, and various assorted shills and sycophants who inhabit the leadership membership of both major political parties, would have us all believe this country's second war of independence was visited on the people of the South because the inhabitants of those states were prejudiced against people of color. This totally flies in the face of true history. I'm reading from one of my own published documents, Thelma. Seven southern states seceded between December of 1860, South Carolina being the first, and February 1st of 1861, which was Texas. Four states, Virginia, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Tennessee, did not secede until Lincoln unconstitutionally ordered up 75,000 volunteers to invade the states that had at that point in time seceded because laws were being opposed and obstructed. Lincoln ordered up these troops after Fort Sumter, which he created, but that's another hour show, and fired upon by Confederate forces. Ironically, the refortifying of Fort Sumter was a move Lincoln's advisors had warned against. But it's very important for people to understand that Fort Sumter was the point of revenue collection on the Morrill Tariff in Charleston. So it has a significance that most people want to avoid, and that was the point he attacked, or there was an attack. He fortified that position without notification of the people of South Carolina. The people actually, Major Anderson moved from another fort to Fort Sumter to defend it because it was a point of revenue collection. And I don't think we can pass over that without some thought on that subject. But those four states did not secede because of slavery, and it is barely mentioned in any of their secession agreements. Those states seceded because Lincoln ordered them to provide troops to invade their sister states. Now, unknown to most people is the fact that Missouri also seceded. Their legislature voted to secede, and Lincoln immediately invaded the state of Missouri for seceding. And he did that before he invaded the other southern states. So there is quite a bit of evidence here. And, it's going to be tough to actually cover this in the time allotted. And hopefully maybe someday down the road you gentlemen will see fit to invite me back and we can get into more of it. But I do want to jump.
It makes total sense now that there was four states that seceded. Lincoln mustered 75,000 troops. And what you had said earlier, yes, with four states that had seceded and 75,000 troops, it would have been very probably relatively easy for him to go in there and win a war in a couple of days and get it back to the status quo, right? And so because of that, that's why the other states seceded and said, no, you're not, right?
Most definitely. And I think to kind of get to that question, because I know we're going to be limited on time, kind of key me in. I don't always hear that music coming.
All right. I tell you what, it's coming up. It's going to be coming up here in about a minute. Go ahead.
Well, let me run this in very briefly, and I'll run these statistics in for people to be cogitating on until we come back. And that is the fact that the national debt in 1860 was around $93 to $95 billion. $1 million, not billion, million with an M. And at the end of 1865, our national debt was $6 billion. So we went from 90-some million to $6 billion, and the war was extended many times to make sure that that debt was accumulated. And the 14th Amendment, Article 4, says the question of the national debt or the validity of the national debt shall never be questioned. So you can link those two together. We'll get into it later.
Okay, I'm going to answer your question as to why they wouldn't let Stonewall Jackson march into Washington. Because of that national debt being extended almost, $5.9 billion or whatever it was for the coffers of the Rothschilds. That's what it was about. We got to go to a break here. That's the answer to the question. But then isn't that always the answer to the question? Is qui bono, who benefits? Got a break coming up. We'll be back in three with my valued guests, Michael Getty and Daryl from Alabama. See you in a few minutes, folks. Stick around. More to come.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read a few from Amazon.com. Dr. Sam Serino reviewed the Extendivite product. Good ingredients, feeling much better since taking product. It seems that the tablets work well. Once again, thank you for your product. My acid reflux is really improved thanks to the Extendivite. Together with my thumb joints, the pain is gone and I'm able to grip things much better. My friend has peripheral arterial disorder and their lower legs were hurting at a red color, but thankfully there has been a significant improvement. Kind regards, Janice. My husband feels a big difference using Extendivite. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
American Awakening, Michael Herzog, your host, with my special guest, Michael Gatti, sitting in on the flight deck, but not having a rein on the controls. Daryl and I are controlling it. Michael is giving out some fabulous information. I want to make an announcement, folks. I'm not taking any phone calls today because I think this information is too valuable, and I don't want to disrupt the flow of this information because it fits part and parcel a lot to what we're seeing today. With that, Daryl, you have another question for him before we allow him to go ahead and succeed in his taking us in a journey back so we can go forward and see with better clarity?
Well, with having been properly admonished, I'm gonna sit on my hands here and just turn it loose to Michael to continue.
That sounds great. Just make sure you don't. Yeah, don't flip off the autopilot here, Daryl. Go ahead. Go ahead, Michael.
I need to jump back into the pinto beans and the cornbread for a moment. And
right.
I take us all the way back to 25 June of 1788. And I would like to read Virginia's document of joining in with the Union and ratifying the Constitution. And you will see how this plays out in just a moment. and I quote from that document, "We, the delegates of the people of Virginia, duly elect in pursuance of a recommendation from the General Assembly and now met in convention, having fully and freely investigated and discussed the proceedings of the Federal Convention and being prepared as well as the most mature deliberation hath enabled us to decide upon," listen very carefully here, "do in the name and in behalf of the people of Virginia declare and make known that the powers granted under the Constitution being derived from the people of the United States may be resumed by them whensoever the same shall be perverted to their injury or oppression, and that every power not granted thereby remains with the people and at their will." Now that is extremely important because in 1861, Virginia issued this document, "An ordinance to repeal the ratification of the Constitution of the United States of America by the state of Virginia and to resume all the rights and powers granted under said Constitution. The people of Virginia and their ratification of the Constitution of the United States of America adopted by them in convention the 25th day of June in the year of our Lord 1788, having declared that the powers granted under said Constitution were derived from the people of the United States and might be resumed whensoever the same shall be perverted to their injury and oppression, and the federal government having perverted said powers not only to the injury of the people of Virginia, but to the oppression of the southern slave-holding states." That's the only place in this document slavery is mentioned. "Now, therefore, we the people of Virginia do declare and ordain that the ordinance adopted by the people of this state in convention of the 25th day of June in the year of our Lord 1788, whereby the Constitution of the United States of America was ratified, and all acts of the General Assembly of this state ratifying and adopting amendments to said Constitution are hereby repealed and abrogated, and that the union between the state of Virginia and other states under the Constitution aforesaid is hereby dissolved." So secession was legal because secession was written into the ratification documents of three states. Article 4, Section 2 says all states have the same privileges and immunities. So if those three states have the right to secede, all states have the right to secede. I think it's critical we make that point.
Wow, and you said a mouthful there, I'll tell you. I mean, Daryl, now I don't want you to sit on the sidelines here because you're still in the pilot seat. Now, this Michael has a whole lot more to cover, and I'm tell you what, I've written, just with what you have said, Michael, I've got like 4 pages of notes that I'm going to have to dig down deep, put my investigative hat on, my Sherlock Holmes hat, and investigate further. But I've already had a couple of requests for you to come back at another time. So, yes, you will. I will enjoy having you back up again. At any rate, Daryl, now, is there any specific questions before he gets back on his timeline here and that you might want to throw in?
Well, my only comment is that with what Michael just read, the Constitution of 1788 and the later document by the state of Virginia of the many states, of the many constitutional states, when they wrote that, when the Constitution and the laws therein of were applied, they were abrogated by the federal United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all well and good to say you have a constitution, but if it's of no effect, you don't really have one. And so this is what I call this act of civil war is basically the first time the federal United States attacked America, and the second time was on 9/11 when the federal United States attacked America. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Michael, continue on with some more juicy and luscious tidbits here. I'm still writing.
Okay, here's some things, and Michael, I'll be happy. I've got quite a few notes on this. I'll be happy to send them to you if you would like them in my form, if you later will provide me with an email address. But to jump back in here now, I think it is totally relevant that the people understand that the people in the North in 1860 and 1861 agreed with the people in the South that they had a right to secede. And this is documented in the newspapers of the North at the time. And I will give you a couple of quotes. The precedent for secession had been set by the states of New England when they threatened to secede because Thomas Jefferson was president and because Thomas Jefferson had brought in the Louisiana Purchase. It was called the Hartford Convention of 1814, and the New England states who refused to participate in the War of 1812. We aren't taught that either. But just to quote from some of the newspapers in the North in 1860-1861 era, it says, "We sympathize with and justify the South. Their rights have been invaded to the extreme limit possible within the forms of this Constitution." This was published in the Albany, New York Atlas and Argus on November 9th of 1860. Okay, another one. "Fanatics and demagogues of the North waged war on the institutions of the South." This was in the Concord, New Hampshire Democratic Standard in November of 1860. Also, we have, "We believe that the right of any member of this Confederacy to dissolve its political relations with the others and assume an independent position is absolute. That, in other words, if South Carolina wants to go out of the Union, she has a right to do so, and no party or power may justly say her nay." Cincinnati Daily Press, November of 1860. I have several pages of those quotes out of Northern newspapers during that era, but I think I don't want to get to the redundant stage of stating the same thing over and over again.
No, you've made a very clear point regarding that. So, you know, with the way that you've laid it out and explained this regarding what the, the perceptions or the attitude of the North was towards blacks back then, and the customs and freedoms actually that the slaves of the South had, and it was ultimately realized that it was better to not have them as slaves because of the, financial gains of labor from them. You know, it just shows you how hypocritical and upside down this whole thing was, and for them to even convey in our history books, Michael, that it was something that it wasn't. It's just part and parcel of the continued hypocrisy and the continued lies that they continually feed us over the course of I don't know how many years. And it probably goes back even, you know, farther than the second American Revolution. But, you know, it looks like there has been an escalation of this all through the years, all the way up to and including now, which is now, I'm sure you'll agree, Michael, it's the worst we've ever seen. It is the most in-your-face, hypocritical, upside-down, villainous government we have ever seen in the history of our existence. Would you agree to that?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, your co-pilot and I have discussed that, pardon me, ad nauseum at times, that we are witness and live witnesses to the most corrupt regime in the history of the world. And I don't see how we could ever doubt that, and we have minions, absolutely millions of people who believe that they can actually change this by voting, and I have admonished people over and over and over again, pardon me again, that I can find in researching our founders, I can find no one in the Sons of Liberty or Patrick Henry or any of these people who ever advocated voting King George out of power.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I could touch up on the topic of bloodline. I'm not sure whether that would fit with the narrative today, but it would make sense because of the inherent corruption that has been ongoing throughout the last couple hundred years. That's a story for another day. But in saying so, towards the end of the war, Michael, we were up in 1863 and so forth, and we had talked about Stonewall Jackson being called off from going into Washington, D.C. At what point in the war did it start to turn, and why?
Stonewall's death really made a change in the North because Robert E. Lee had witnessed the absolute devastation at Fredericksburg in late 1862. He had seen the Union Army charge across that open field and had personally witnessed his artillery and his fire from the stone wall in Fredericksburg and other places, had seen the Northern Army absolutely ripped to shreds by charging a fortified position. Mm-hmm. Robert E. Lee knew this would not work. He had to know it would not work. But yet after Stonewall Jackson and his, and if there would have been two more hours of daylight, the war would have ended at Chancellorsville in May of 1863. Stonewall was driving the army into the Rappahannock River, just ran out of daylight. But after Stonewall's death, there never was any logical military move by Robert E. Lee. And I love Robert E. Lee. I love the man himself. But he was not the battlefield leader that the South needed. The South needed Thomas Johnson Jackson very much so.
I see. Okay, so the death of Stonewall Jackson was 1863. Now, and forgive me for being naive at this, did he die on the battlefield?
Yes, he was actually at Chancellorsville. He was coming back into his own lines, and he was mistaken. The lines had been changed. The forces on the line, the defensive perimeter had been changed. They did not know Stonewall and his entourage was out there. He did his own reconnaissance work. Imagine that in today's history. He did his own reconnaissance work, and he was coming back into the lines and was accidentally shot by his own men. He died 5 days later, not of the gunshots, but of pneumonia. He had lost his left arm, was amputated because of those shots. After that, it just seemed like well, you can go to Gettysburg, you can see where his leadership was just absolutely dissolved and destroyed, his tactics, his strategy. Lee attacked across an open field, the same thing he had witnessed at Fredericksburg and at Cold Harbor, and he did exactly what the Union Army had done before. Much to the chagrin of James Longstreet, who was a mediocre battlefield commander at best. But Longstreet even contested Lee the night before and kept saying, let's do a flanking movement. Let's flank around Little Round Top. And Lee finally became perturbed, pounded the desk, and said, the enemy is there. I will attack there. Basically took out about 20% of the Confederate Army in one day.
So Robert E. Lee, from what you're saying, is kind of, I don't know, belligerent, arrogant type of attitude and not really strategic. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't see him as being, I think he was just pushed at that time. I can't understand, of course, I know he was probably one of the most moral men in the history of America. Just a fantastic man, a fantastic leader of people, but not necessarily so a battlefield strategist. A great man. He did many things, so I don't want to be derogatory toward Lee at all. I love the man. I love the character. Stonewall was just a military strategist. He just understood, but he would never have been promoted to the leadership of the Army because he was not a member of the elite of the gentry in the South. He just the gentry was held by Jefferson Davis as being critical. He kept Braxton Bragg, who was a blithering idiot, he kept him in command. He basically held Nathan Bedford Forrest by the coattails. If they would have turned Nathan Bedford Forrest loose in Tennessee, Grant would have never had the strength to attack the South.
Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. You adhere to in these little snippets and tidbits that you've planted throughout this program with the the influence of the Rothschilds and the French right into his uncle Solomon Rothschild and the elites with their involvement and their overseance of this and the national debt going from I think you said it was $100 billion to $6 billion, which is $5.9 billion that these banksters even back then were making on both sides of the war, because to the victor belonged the spoils, and it's gotten worse throughout the years and with the introduction of the military industrial complex and the warnings that were being made by both Eisenhower and John F. Kennedy regarding this issue, and as it's just expanded out of control and become just nothing but a warmongering tool throughout the planet for these banksters. Would you agree with that?
Oh, most definitely, but we could get into a whole program on Dwight Eisenhower. He didn't warn anybody about the military-industrial complex until he was leaving it.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Okay, we're going to have a break coming up here, Daryl and Michael. Let's see,
okay.
we got about a minute, and we'll take the break, and I'll come back, and I'm going to let my pilot take it off of autopilot and ask Michael in the last few minutes if he's got any closing thoughts. But before we even go to break, I want to thank both of you guys, because I've gotten one heck of a history lesson today, Michael Gatti, and I commend you for your diligent research. I'm absolutely amazed, and it disgusts me that they actually taught that blithering nonsense back in my days of elementary and junior high school. that being said, I'll hear the music coming up in just a second. Take a breath, guys. Daryl, get ready to close this out, because I'm going to take it off autopilot and give it to you. And Michael, again, I'm getting emails here as we speak that they definitely want to have you back up again. You've obviously enlightened many of my audience, and I want to thank you for that. Closing thoughts, prepare for them after the break, and I don't know why the music's not coming up yet, but it should be. And then we will close this show out, gentlemen. I don't know why. The clock is there, but the music's not. Okay. And by the way, the audience...
Let me...
Go ahead. There it is.
Here it is. The music's coming now.
All right. You're gonna open up the finals. Well, I'll open it up, and I'm going to turn it over to you here on the closing comments from both of you guys. Be right back.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in
so much faith. All right, folks, we're back. Final segment of the American Awakening with your host, Michael Herzog. Michael Gaddy, my special guest, very, very knowledgeable on the Civil War. I congratulate him again. Quick announcement. I want to remind everybody, for those of you who didn't listen at the beginning of the show, I will be back on John Stadtmuller's show today to give an overview of what I had presented yesterday, because evidently some people didn't quite sink in and he wants me to give an overview of it. So with that, Daryl, closing thoughts for Michael Gaddy.
Well, in the valuable bit of time that we have left, I'd like to supply the listening audience how they can get more of Michael Gaddy at a convenient time for him. You can go on YouTube, type in Civil War History, Why It Matters Today, and you will be blessed with a two-hour presentation that was recorded here locally in my locale a year ago, and it covers a lot of this information in more detail. And you can also go on YouTube and type in Michael Gaddy, that's G-A-D-D-Y, two constitutions, and you'll have about as much of a red pill on the Civil War history as you can probably handle in a weekend. So,
all right,
and Michael,
yes, well, go ahead, Michael,
well,
the other mic.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, if I may, gentlemen, the thing I would like to say is that in most surveys in America today, when people do any kind of poll, Abraham Lincoln is either number one or number two in the best presidents in this country, a feeling that is shared equally by other people in history, namely Karl Marx and Adolf Hitler. Hitler mentioned, and I will quote this, the individual states of the American Union could not have possessed any state sovereignty of their own, for it was not these states that formed the Union. On the contrary, it was the Union which formed a great part of such so-called states, Adolf Hitler, Mein Kampf, page 566. He praised Lincoln, Karl Marx praised Lincoln in writing, and so, therefore, if these two despots in history love this man so well, how can Americans embrace him as they do?
It's called propaganda and brainwashing there, Michael. You know, and it's been happening. What's that?
I said, the problem is it's working.
I know. That's what we're trying to do, is cut through the Kool-Aid. Wow. Well, listen, gentlemen, I want to thank you both very much for taking up your time today and coming on. Daryl, riding shotgun with me in the airplane. And Michael, it's fantastic. I have Daryl. Daryl, go ahead and shoot my email address over to Michael and let him supply me with a few of those other documents that I can read through at my leisure. So, again, I want to thank you guys both very much for coming on, and we'll do it again, okay? Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome, both of you, and I'll talk to you off air, Daryl. Okay, folks, in closing this out, I hope you learned as much as I did today. I've got about six pages of notes here. Fantastic guests today. I'm glad I had guests today, because I didn't have the opportunity to really prepare anything. I was too busy preparing my overview for John's show today. Now, I'm probably going to be in touch with Joanne and James Moriarty over this weekend. I'm going to try to have them up next week. And don't forget, Tuesday, I've got Phil McConnell coming up that I'm going to give him, shoot some questions at him, give him an overview of what I've discussed on John's show the last couple of days, and get his thoughts on it. So stay out of trouble. I'll see you first thing. Well, not first thing, but I'll see you Monday, same time, same station. Bye for now.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsite.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.